The recollection of death, or marana anusati, happens to be a particular kind of meditation practice or meditation discipline. And I want therefore to begin by saying this evening something in general on the subject of meditation. Now we find nowadays that a lot of people talk about meditation, a lot of people practice meditation compared with the numbers practicing it before, a lot of people even teach meditation, a lot of people talk about meditation. So the word is quite well known, the word is quite current, as it were. You can even see it on posters in the underground. But what meditation essentially is, what meditation comprehends, what sort of ground meditation covers, how it is to be practiced, what its significance is, how many different kinds of meditation practice there are, all these points are not so well understood. Now, very broadly speaking, we can say that there are three main senses in which the word meditation can be used. And they correspond, we may say, to three successively higher levels of experience, or if you like, successively higher levels of consciousness. First of all, there's meditation in the sense of the integration, the bringing together of all our psychic energies. This is the first level, if you like, the first step. Human beings, like other living things, are embodiments of energy. That's what we essentially are. Maybe we don't look like it sometimes, but this is what we essentially are, embodiments of energy. If you like, crystallized, semi-crystallized energy. But unfortunately, our energy is, as it were, split up into all sorts of streams. Streams of energy flowing, some in this direction, some in that direction, some meandering happily, others rushing and pouring and tumbling. And sometimes these different streams of energy, instead of flowing together, instead of flowing harmoniously, flow, as it were, in opposition. They are locked, as it were, in a sort of conflict. They sort of cancel each other, cancel one another even out. And when that happens, we tend to stagnate. We're fighting with ourselves. Our energies are split. We're divided. We're divided people, divided selves, if you like. And this is a situation in which many people find themselves today. Their energies are scattered. They're distracted. They can't do very much, they can't achieve very much, because their energies are divided against themselves, because they are divided against their own self. So the first thing that we have to do is to bring all these energies together, to collect all these scattered energies, to get them flowing, as it were, in the same channel, and have that channel, as it were, cutting deeper and deeper and deeper all the time. And the energy is flowing more and more smoothly, more and more steadily along that one channel in the direction of their true, their ultimate goal. So this is what meditation is in the first place. Meditation in the sense of the integration of the sum total of one's psychical, even of one's psychophysical energies, so that they flow smoothly and harmoniously, so that there's no conflict, no discord, so that one experiences peace, one experiences harmony, one experiences a great sense of integration, of everything coming together, not everything being ripped apart, as it were. And then there's meditation in a still higher sense. Meditation in the sense of the experience of what we can describe as superconscious states. These are the states which are collectively termed in the Indian tradition dhyanas. And they are states of progressive, superconscious simplification, in the sense that, according to tradition, confirmed by people's experience, in the lower dhyanas, there are quite a number of different mental or psychical factors, as they're called. But as the experience develops, as one passes from a lower to a higher dhyana, the number of psychical factors is gradually reduced. In the first dhyana, for instance, out of the four, in the first dhyana, one experiences not only integration, which one carries over from meditation in the previous sense, but one experiences bliss, one experiences joy, one experiences subtle mental activity of various kinds. But as one ascends, then the mental activity gradually fades away. One does not think of anything. One does not think about anything. All mental functioning in this sense has entirely ceased. The mind is stilled. But at the same time, one is perfectly aware, perfectly conscious, in fact, more aware and more conscious than ever. Only there's no mental activity. The whole mind becomes like a vast pool, a vast lake, on which every ripple has died away. The water has not died away, the water is still there. But instead of being rippled, instead of being tossed into waves, it's perfectly calm, perfectly level, perfectly shining, and perfectly serene. So this is what the experience is like in the second dhyana, when there's no mental activity. And as one ascends, as one goes even higher, then even the experience of joy, which is comparatively coarse, fades away. And what one has left is the integrated psychical contents of feeling intense bliss and intense peace, and still, of course, no mental activity. And going even further, even higher, eventually, there's not even a feeling of bliss. Even that is too coarse. Even that is not refined enough for this level, or at this level. At this fourth level, all that one experiences, all that one knows, is just a sort of vast ocean, as it were, of integration, if you like, of mental harmony, with an overwhelming experience of absolute peace, which far surpasses any experience of happiness or even bliss. So in this way the jhanas develop. In this way, in the case of these superconscious states, one goes from lower to higher and ever higher states and experiences. And on the way all sorts of things happen. One may have other experiences too. What I've described represents a sort of standard pattern, but there are all sorts of additional dimensions, all sorts of byways and bypaths of experience according to different people's temperaments and backgrounds and so on. Some people have all sorts of visionary experiences. They see great archetypal images. They may see in the course of their meditation the sort of floating forms of landscapes. They may see jewel-like objects, mandalas. They may even see Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, gods, goddesses, and so on, all emerging, as it were, from the depths of their own minds. All of these are experiences which may come to one person or another in the course of their meditation practice at this level, as they're passing one by one through these jhanas. And also, they may start developing various subtle, supernormal faculties. They might start finding themselves becoming extraordinarily telepathic, aware of what is happening in other people's minds, or at least much, much more sensitive to other people's emotional reactions and so on. They may even occasionally find themselves hearing and seeing things at a distance, or they might even have the odd flash of what seems to be a recollection of a previous life, a previous existence. But one is advised, when these sort of things happen, just to leave them aside, not to become fascinated, not to pursue them, but just to press on that path, to try to go from the lower to the higher dhyana, and in this way extend and deepen one's experience of this level of meditation. So this is meditation in the second sense, meditation in the sense of experience of superconscious states. And then thirdly, there's meditation in the sense of insight into the true nature of existence. Now, what does this mean? It means that as you ascend, as you go from lower to higher jhana states, as you go from lower to higher levels of consciousness, the experience not only becomes more integrated, it not only becomes more blissful, it not only becomes more peaceful. Also, of course, as I mentioned, there's a cessation quite early on of mental processes. But also what happens is that one's experience becomes more and more objective. You become less and less under the influence of your own subjectivity, less and less under the influence of the pleasure principle, one might say. Everything becomes less and less distorted by subjective factors. And you begin, as it were, to get above all those things. Just like an aeroplane emerging from the clouds into the clear sky, into the stratosphere, where there are no clouds and there's just the blue sky. And you begin, as it were, to look down on everything below, down on the earth, down on everything conditioned, and see it just as it is. Because you're clear of it. Away from it, free of it. And you can see it for the first time, perhaps, or at least begin to see it much more objectively. You begin to see things as they really are. You begin to see reality. In other words, you develop the beginnings, at least, of what is called insight or wisdom, which leads directly to enlightenment, directly to nirvana. So these are the three main senses in which one uses this word meditation. So you can see that the word meditation covers a very great deal of ground. It operates on these three vastly different levels. In the first place, there's meditation as concentration. In other words, the integration of all the psychical contents. There's meditation as, we may say, meditation. Let's keep that word for this stage. Experience of these states of higher consciousness. And then meditation as contemplation. Developing insight, developing wisdom on the basis of one's experience of these superconscious states. So meditation in the sense of concentration, meditation in the sense of meditation, meditation in the sense of contemplation. So this is the scheme, if you like, that very broadly and roughly we establish.